The world that we see around us is built on a story. This feeling, the more beautiful world that our hearts know is possible. Our hearts know it's possible. I'm sure you've had that feeling many times here today. But our minds do not know that it's possible. Our minds cannot see how to get from here to there. For us to, because our understanding of causality even doesn't allow for a path from here to there. For this more beautiful world to actually manifest, miracles would have to happen. Which is why I've become interested in miracles, which are not the intercession of an external divine agency in violation of the laws of nature. Miracles are something that are impossible from an old understanding of reality and possible from a new one. That is the transition we are going through today. We're going through a transition in our basic understanding of what's real, in our story of the world, I call it, in our basic mythology. Pick up the property and tax mountains. Pick up the jobs hanging over our heads. They think they hold the only key to redemption. They think it has to do with what we do in bed. They say that life is just rehearsal for the real thing. They think that life is just a pain to write above. They got the fire. Science is very deeply ingrained in our understanding of the world, and it provides an account of exactly this, of what's real. I don't think necessarily science is at the very bottom of our perception of the world and of our perception of ourselves. Every culture has a different set of answers to these basic questions of who are you? What is it to be a human being? What's important? What's valuable? Where do we come from? Where are we going? How does the world work? Every culture answers this in a different way. And science provides some answers, but all of these are all of the 10 scientific dogmas that Rupert described are part of, I call it the myth of separation. And it says basically that what you are is a discrete, separate individual among other individuals in a universe that's separate from you as well, that runs along mechanically, indifferent to your interests, separate from you. And every field pretty much has agreed with this characterization of what it is to exist. Physics, yeah, you're a mass subject to impersonal forces that are deterministic. I mean, obsolete physics, okay. Biology, yes, you are basically a flesh robot programmed by your genes to maximize reproductive self-interest. Economics, you are a rational actor seeking to maximize financial self-interest. Psychology, you're this bubble of psychology or this mind encased in flesh. Religion, you are a soul encased in flesh. All of them agreed on what it was to exist. And this story is changing today. It's quite natural growing up in this society to have this understanding of what it is to exist and how the world works, because for one thing, our economics reflects it back at us. Our experience of living in a competitive economy, a money-based economy, where we're always in competition with each other, in the experience of everyone's in it for themselves and more for you is less for me. Other cultures didn't have that experience of life in a gift culture, more for you was more for me. Because if you had more than you needed, you would pass it on to someone who needed it. And so all of these spiritual teachings that we're really attracted to today, that I would call the new story, they were much more natural in this context. So our defining mythology has a scientific component, it has an economic component, it has a religious component, and of course all of these things are intertwined, and each supports the other, which is why it's not hard to see that scientific orthodoxy has financial interests behind it. And all of these are breaking down in various ways. Usually I talk about how the financial system is breaking down and how that reflects the breakdown in our deeper stories. If we're separate from the universe, for example, if we're separate from the universe, then of course we want to control these indifferent or hostile external forces. And humanity's destiny becomes to become the lords and masters of nature and to transcend nature.
Thinking's out of fashion, patriots with passion, cruel from everywhere. Now what's all them sounds more and more like yours or mine. Under some hypnosis, a national psychosis breaks across the land. You know I loved this country once upon a time.
It's not working too well anymore. In economics, that translates into growth, the endless growth of the human realm. And we're learning that there's a limit to that. And we're learning that it's not an external universe out there, but that everything we do to this world, we're doing on some level to ourselves. Everything we do to the Eskimo curlew or the passenger pigeon, that is a wound that we feel all the time and that we suffer from. That pain of existing in our culture that's so omnipresent, we don't even realize it, except when we're bored, you know? That feeling of, why does it hurt just to exist? People in, quote, primitive societies didn't experience boredom. It's a relatively new phenomenon. So we're moving into a different story of self, a different story of the world, a different story of the people. And we've been talking about it all day here. The self of interconnectedness, the self of inner beingness. So I'd like to talk about what that actually means for us, practically speaking. One thing it means is that these tiny actions may have a significance beyond that we can understand according to our old view of cause and effect in a Newtonian universe where the only effect you have on the universe is by exerting a force on it. Well, the new sciences contradict that. Things don't change only when a force is exerted upon them. On the quantum level, stuff just happens randomly. Random used to mean we don't have enough information and we don't know why it happened, but there's a deterministic reason. But not anymore. It's an irreducible indeterminacy. And quantum mechanics also seems to violate the separation between self and other, between observer and observed. And, well, physicists have dealt with that by basically relegating it to the micro realm and saying the world still works deterministically in effect, and excluding any evidence that doesn't fit into that paradigm, excluding things like morphic fields, excluding things like water memory, excluding all kinds of things that any scientist in the room would begin scoffing at and feeling triggered by and derisive about, which speaks to the emotional attachment to these paradigms and the fact that our stories have kind of an immune system that keeps them intact as long as possible. But they're getting harder and harder to maintain today as the world built on top of our defining mythology falls apart, as our ecosystems fall apart, as our political system, as our educational system, healthcare system falls apart. Things aren't working so well anymore, and it's a lot harder to fully believe in our stories. So they're falling apart practically and falling apart scientifically and kind of birthing us into a new understanding of what's real and what's possible and who we are. And in that new story, that logic of the heart that says, yeah, I know that this is a significant act, and I know that everything I do is significant, no longer contradicts the logic of the mind, which had been the logic of separation. And what effect could you, one tiny little being, have with the puny force available to you when the powers that be have so much more force at their disposal, and there's billions of other people who just don't care? That was the old story. And now we're able to believe what we know.
Gaia softly turning, Luna never sleeping, Mama Moonlight heavy with a belly of dreams that's almost falling. Night gloom take me under, night skin taste of wonder, night kiss stir the hunger, lap in the dark with tongues of silver. So much time, we circle the sky with one wing beating, searching for a light that's
and now we're able to believe what we know with a little help from our friends, because there's still a lot of influences upon us that maintain the old habits of separation. And we doubt, and that cynical voice, which comes from the wound of betrayed expectations. Because when we're young, we have this knowledge that the world is supposed to be much more beautiful than what has been offered to us as normal. And life is supposed to be more joyous than what has been offered to us as normal. We understand that. But that expectation gets betrayed again and again and again. And to protect it, we develop cynicism. So to reawaken our knowledge, to reawaken and to bring it into belief, we need help to counteract all of the forces that would suppress it. For example, economic forces. And for example, the logic that says, what good could it possibly do? And so we gather together at events like this, and we surround ourselves with other people who say, yeah, I understand it too. I've seen a little piece of it too. And we hold each other in a new story. And with that, I'll just say a few things about what we can practically do for other people, because you may have noticed that that it's not so easy to change somebody's beliefs. One of our habits of separation is to try to change them by force, to overcome them with the force of logic, or to maybe make people ashamed of the way that they're living in the world. And shame is also a kind of force. Or to say, well, they're just these evil people out there who only understand force. I know you, you're a corporate CEO monster or something like that. You're not like me, you're separate from me. Raoul was talking about the fallacy of that perception, that if I were you, I wouldn't be doing as you're doing. And when we understand, and this is another example of our interbeingness, when we understand that, yeah, that person is essentially the same as I am, that person is a locus of attention in a different situation. And if I were that person, I would be doing the same thing. Then from that understanding of oneness or of inner being, we no longer believe that the only way to change that person is by exercising force. And if we do that, really, if we just exercise force, what are we doing? We're strengthening the morphic field of force. And what happens if we act from love? And we act from the understanding that that person is like me. That person has a gift to give to the world and will not feel happy unless he or she is giving that gift. And I want that for you too. This is something that's eminently practical. And any time that we give somebody a reason or give somebody an experience that doesn't fit into the old story, it weakens that old story. It disrupts it. It could be an act of generosity. It could be an act of forgiveness. Anything that violates that understanding that we're separate and everyone's in it for themselves.
Everything moves toward the light and the knowing. everything toward the light. Plants in the darkness will turn to the moon in the night. Open my sense to the story unfolding, open like books in the wind, turning the pages without any purpose. The mind becomes sky, and the rain passes through. Flash in the distance, the thunder soon coming, the wind and rocks nor the rain is sending a message that words don't begin to explain. Breath in the lungs is the world passing through us over and over again. Ancient as sunlight, connected in body and the mind.
The world that we see around us is built on a story. By acting from a different story, we disrupt the psychic substructure of our mythology. And we offer an alternative. And that's why I'm actually quite sympathetic to events like this, where we're in some sense speaking to the choir. The choir makes beautiful music together. And the louder we sing it, the more other people will be able to hear it. And maybe when their world is working, when their story is still working really well, they're not going to be interested. But that story isn't working very well. And it's not going to work. It's going to work less and less well, unless you believe that a finite planet can accommodate infinite growth. The story is doomed. And as it falls apart, people on a personal level, their story is going to fall apart, and they're going to be more and more open to something new.
Brush of the skin against wind and the water reminds me that I am alive. Moonlight flows through me sometimes when I turn in the night. Left dreams of the ocean, sound of the surf in my sleep. What will you feel when you wake up and find that the life you believe is both real and unreal?
Transition, you could say. Reunion. A reunion, as I said, of heart and mind. A reunion of matter and spirit. Learning that it's not that the sacredness that we feel in the world is due to some external thing called spirit, but that matter has all of the properties that we once ascribed to spirit. Part of that reunion is, as Satish was saying, revaluing working with our hands, regaining the dignity of materiality, which has been part, the loss of that dignity of materiality has been part of our campaign to transcend nature, to separate ourselves from nature, to become nature's lords and masters. There's the scientific version of that, which has us become robots, androids, going off into space, synthesizing food, becoming independent of nature. And then there's the spiritual dimension of that, which is this kind of spiritualization, this kind of dematerialization, where the holy person doesn't have anything to do with the flesh, doesn't have anything to do with the world. And seeing the world as unspiritual has led us to treat it as such, to treat it as something not sacred. And we're healing from that right now. We've been looking for sacredness everywhere but where it is. And we can't sustain that any longer. And you look around the world according to the old understanding of cause and effect based on force. These problems are impossible to solve. But as the entertainer Sun Ra said, we've tried everything possible, none of it has worked. Now we must try the impossible. And one more thing. Polly said, she talked about daring to be great and what that meant as being in service to something larger than yourself. And I would offer that as the formula for accomplishing the impossible, for stepping into the flow of synchronicity. You don't know how to get from here to there, but that thing larger than yourself does. And it arranges these synchronicities, being at the right place at the right time, being in flow. I think everyone's experienced that. And usually when you experience that, it's when your world has kind of fallen apart and you're in this state of uncertainty, and then all things like start to flow and they start to work, right? And we can enter that state when we let go of the paradigm of control and put ourselves, bow into service to this thing larger than ourselves. And what is this thing? What is it that unifies all of these different things that we're committed to? Let's call it the more beautiful world our heart knows is possible.
History is bound to repeat itself until we all wake up and get off this ride. I believe the time is now knocking on our door. Will yours and my lock will open wide. Be the change. Be the change. Nothing can't be done, that's what they were saying. Maybe you're the one, maybe you're the one. Change has just begun. Change it, change it, said it first, who will be the next to be part of the cure for the pains we have. Be the change. Be the change. Be the change.